reduce it to a written record? It's absolutely ridiculous.
Representative Parkinson, the way the bill reads, at least the way I read it, you might correct me, is that places on the record the substance of any written or oral ex parte communications concerning the decision or action. The applicant in this case would, I don't see it as they have to write down what happened, that they would have to say into the little microphone so the tape recorder could pick it up that I had communication with Mayor Joe Blow and we talked about this and this, and I also at the same time gave him a packet of materials that contained X, X, and X.
No, but the public official, Madam Chair, is supposed to do that. He's supposed to go back and say, I had coffee with Bill Duncan from Stiff's Furniture. He's talking about maybe getting a variance on that lot next door, and it'd be a terrible burden.
It was my understanding that it would only be at the hearing following the contact when it would be on the issue. In other words, I don't understand that it would pertain to any other matter except when there was a hearing on the issue itself. There is concern at this time. You apparently have individuals who are willing to talk to you. In the city of Portland and in the metropolitan area, the public officials are very unwilling and very uncomfortable in talking to anyone coming from outside or even the people who live there if they're talking about extending a development or putting one in. Consequently, the individuals trying to attempt to get this development don't know until they've invested a lot of time and money whether they're ever going to get the ability to do that development. And I think one of our concerns is whether it's yes or no, it would be extremely helpful to be able to talk to a public official, get an idea of whether you're going to be able to do it or not.
Representative Parkinson, would you put it on the onus on the applicant as opposed to the public official?
I think I'd like the bill where it didn't have the black print in it.
Pardon?
I'd like the bill better if it didn't have the black print in it. And it would just say that an ex parte contact would not invalidate a decision. If somebody thinks that the improper action was taken, let them sue them.
That's existing law.
We gotta say that I think the bill doesn't say that it has to be reversed or remanded. The fact it says that it may be if there was ex parte contact that was not made a matter of public record. It's not saying that it shall be, because everything might be in order and everything might be fine and there might not be any objections to it. So it's still somewhat discretionary, but whether it has to be reversed or remanded just because a contact was not made a matter of public record.
I will make another comment with some public officials I've talked to, and having, like Representative Parkinson, been one. There are times that it was a real nice excuse not to talk to people also.
Sure.
And I know when we were at a meeting with some people in Wilsonville about the prison, they wondered why the county commissioners weren't there, and we said they couldn't be there. Since they would have to, if it ever came that they were building, they're the ones that would have to give the permits for that.
Madam Chair, our Planning Commission was advised about this time that a case had been brought before them for zone change or whatever, variance, conditional use, that they should absolutely, under no conditions, go out and inspect the property and talk to the property owner. And they were told it'd probably be better if they didn't even drive by it, so they wouldn't be biased.
I suspect that was going a little to the ridiculous. I have never.
But under this now, if he did drive out and look at the property to try to make a sound decision, if he did happen to run into the property owner, then would he not have to go back and reduce it to writing? Wouldn't he?
If he simply drove by the property.
Drove by the property.
I don't think so, but
if
he stopped and talked to the property owner and it was a pending issue, then I suspect that he should go back and make a note that he had the contact with so-and-so, with the property owner.
Madam Chair.
Representative Hill.
It appears to me that it would have to be reduced to writing if it concerned the decision or action. But if the commissioner just drove by and stopped and chatted about the weather with the owner of the property, it wouldn't have to deal with it. But if they talked about the property and the case at hand, then it would have to be reduced to writing.
Not necessarily reduced to writing, just placed on the record, which could be
orally.
Any further questions? We have Mr. Neal and Mr. Stacy. And Gordon, are you interested in testifying on this? Have you a position?
Sure. Well,
I mean, I'm not looking for people to testify, but I mean, I don't want to leave anyone out either.
I'd like to sit there in case they don't say something.
Thank you very much. You might stick around if people have further questions.
We are too.
Well, that's why we know that we shouldn't trust them.
That's why we didn't.
Well, and so was I, and I thought I was as good. And I didn't see anything ever went on.
I don't know.
But we were exceptional.
That's right.
Well, Chairperson Hooley, members of the committee, for the record,
Madam Chair, I thought he was going to fill in if they didn't.
That's what I thought. They shifted the mic over here, and here I am. Association of Oregon Counties, we are, as best as we can tell at this point, comfortable with the bill with the amendments, but because the amendments clarify, as we see it, that the staff contacts are not considered to be ex parte contacts. I think, to be quite candid with you, that without that clarification and the fear that I already have that the legislation without amendments might muddle up more than what's already there, I'd feel, I guess, second best comfortable with no bill. And I'm being very candid with you, as much as I'd like to work with the representative of Fred Meyer to work something out. I'm just fearful that we're going to make a mess of this particular issue. Those are my comments right now, and I'll let the
So you would prefer, your first choice would be no bill, and your
first choice would be with the bill with amendments in order to have a piece of legislation, because we were trying to work out something that for everybody's concerns. But I know that Mr. Stacy does not like the amendments, which, you know, if we were to have a standoff there, would leave the bill in somewhat of a confused manner, and I think our preference at that point would be no bill at all.
Mr. Foltz.
Madam Chair.
Yes. I was going to ask a question of Mr. Foltz.
Go ahead.
Have you talked to your legislative committee, your governing, your county commissioners about this bill?
We've discussed this generally, and when we first looked at it in the Senate side, it seemed to be a non-threatening, if you will. With further review, particularly by staff members, they came to the conclusion that this would basically prohibit it, as they read it, contact between, it would be ex parte contact between staff and Board of Commissioners or the Planning Commission, which was a real concern and the reason that a few days ago we tried to work out some amendments that took care of the problem. And with those, then, our assumption and the flexibility we have to work our position would be that the bill would be acceptable. But I understand now Mr. Stacy does not like that because he feels that goes too far.
But on the amendments, when you say a member of the decision-making body, would that then delete the Planning Commission?
Well, that would be certainly a decision-making body.
Well, that's what I thought, but I thought you said it would delete from the bill.
It clarifies in the bill that the contacts between the staff member and if you will, the decision-making bodies are not considered to be ex parte contact, which is clarifies our concern with the measure as it was originally or as it now is constituted.
Yes, but I thought when you said Planning Commission, planning staff, that you also said Planning Commission.
No, I meant, I'm sorry, planning staff contact.
That's why I went.
I would like to distribute, if I may, at least a memo that Alan Cooper, a former planning director and now law clerk with the Bureau of Governmental Research and Service, did to us, kind of clarifies, if you will, our...
How did your planning commission, your county commissioners, do they want ex parte contact? Or do they care? Or do you know?
That's a tough question. I think it was a non-issue generally. We left it as a non-issue. So I can't tell you that I had extensive contact to find out whether or not they want something or not. It was just not a big issue. In fact, most of them just said, do we have to deal with this? And that's quite honestly where we first came from on the bill. Now, Fred may have had more contact.
Representative Van Leeuwen and then Representative Parkinson.
Madam Chair, this wasn't my first thing that was in response to what you just asked, but if we put elected officials like our county commissioners in a position where if we talk to them about any issue that they have to make decisions on and we can't talk to them, they run from us or refuse to talk to us, we've certainly put elected people in an untenable position. I expect to be able to talk to my county commissioners. I know I can't talk to we have three, and I know they have a problem of they can't any two of them be together. You've got to go talk to them 1, 2, 3. But I think we need to leave it in whatever form here that makes it very clear that they can talk to their clientele.
Representative Parkinson.
Under the amendments, there's a case before the Planning Commission who is composed of lay members appointed by the City Council. Could the person who has a case before the Planning Commission at that time go and talk to a member on the city of the City Council? The decision is not to the council yet. Could he say, I've got a case down the Planning Commission I think is really going to hurt us if they rule this way or they rule that way or do this? Could he talk then to the City Council?
These are two attorneys. My assumption is that because that's a potential appeals body, the decision, in other words, appealed potentially to the City Council from the Planning Commission, that would constitute an ex parte contact at the time the appeal were to be raised with the City Council.
The City Councilman maybe never will make a decision.
You can't make Fred Neal, League of Oregon Cities, you can't make that assumption that he or she will not. So once the application is submitted, say going to the hearings office, the applicant would be well advised to not try and communicate with their next door neighbor, the council member, in regards to that application.
So your answer was that the Planning Commission can't speak to the council once the application's been made, is that right?
In regards to that application, I think that's correct. That would be ex parte contact. It's not to say they can't do it, but it would be ex parte contact. Now, the consequence of ex parte contact may be nil. It may be determined to not have created bias or to have not broached issues that weren't already made fully aware to the made that the other parties had already been apprised of, so that they'd have no.
If this did happen and there was an appeal to the council ruled either, I guess, in favor of the applicant or against him for that matter. Could one of the other people that were having coffee there and heard this man talk to the councilman 2 or 3 months earlier, then he could bring suit?
If they were a party to the proceeding,
it was not disclosed.
And it was not disclosed. If I may go back and address the bill generally, Chairperson Hooley.
Yes.
Fred Neal, League of Oregon Cities. There is a substantial concern amongst members of planning commissions of cities and members of city councils in regards to how they deal with contact from constituents or outside prospective developers. And Ms. Perrin and Ms. Schroeder have pointed out that has been a problem for the people that they represent. My members seek clarification in that regard. It may not need to be done legislatively. If legislation attempts to address this problem and creates through its language additional problems, then we haven't solved anything.
That's good. Statement. Mr. Neal, Representative Parkinson.
It is just very similar to the process we're engaged in here, where a bill is up a constituent has an interest in. We would not be allowed to talk to them unless we report it to the body. It really puts a chilling effect on a local official. What I'd like to do is switch the bill around and get rid of Faisano. That would be accomplishing something.
I think, at least I was on city council a little later than you, but not that much later, after Faisano, and it was always my policy, because I didn't know at what time I could or what I could say, to just simply avoid talking about an issue or decision with anyone that I was going to have to make a decision on.
They called you up on the phone at home, you just say, sorry, I can't talk to you about
it. Sorry, I can't make any comment to you about that issue because we will hear it, and so that I will not be biased one way or another and can make a... I mean, that was just my own policy, and I suppose every person dealt with it just a little differently, and...
There is a matter now before that will go before the Portland City Council regarding a land application development permit two doors from my home. I am acquainted with all members of the Portland City Council and have seen them in my job ever since that permit was applied for, and have bit my tongue every time because I cannot talk to them about that.
Madam Chair. Fred presumably supports the development proposal.
Well, I can tell you he's enthusiastic about it. Representative Bradbury.
The only thing I would point out here is that in all these cases that I'm aware of, there is a public hearing on the issue. So what we're talking about is some kind of contact between two people in private as opposed to in public.
But
over an issue.
Right, but Representative Bradbury, I would equate that just a little bit to... although it is, what we do here is different than a council member who wears all kinds of hats in that position, but we do talk to people in private and we do have public hearings here, but that doesn't preclude me before that public hearing to talk to Ms. Schroeder or Ms. Barron or Mr. Foltz or anyone else, and we have the public hearing.
Well, I know. It's sort of like the impression is almost being created that there is no communication between the parties, which I don't think is true. I mean, you do have a public hearing. I understand the concern. I'm just saying that there is some communication taking place.
Oh, yes, and I think even with the Faisano decision, as a matter of fact, there's a lot of communication taking place. Some communities more than others, and sometimes... you do it without thinking about it, which I did with a neighbor who was found out was a dispute between two neighbors that were coming up, and one started talking about it, and I said, wait a minute, I can't talk to you about it, and left. But I mean, it was after I'd already gotten an earful. Representative Traer.
Madam Chair, I think that points out, you talked about the problem, you pointed it out. In the small communities, often that does occur. And it seems to me logical that the people ought to be able to talk to their elected officials about an issue, whether it be in the public hearing or prior to it, just as we in the legislature are able to talk to our constituents. And I'm not sure that the bill exactly addresses the problem, but somehow they've got to be some communication besides that public hearing, or should be. And at the same time, the bill does say that you're going to declare that, or somebody's going to declare it at the time that public hearings held, and that makes it open for everyone. I think that's what needs to be done.
Yeah, I think first of all, I will just say a couple more words and then go on. First of all, I think everybody has to understand that the bill as written with amendments, whatever, is a public policy change. It is not clarification of the language. So clean it up. It is a policy change.
Tell me what that is too, darling. Did you?
Well, right now it's prohibited, and under this bill, even though there's been some case law that in certain instances, and depends on what you discuss and where all of this, that it's allowed. But this would open it up to allow that contact on all things to occur. But if it does occur, you have to make a disclosure. That's if the bill is relatively simple. It says you can have it, but if you have it, you must disclose it.
Madam Chair.
Representative Anderson.
I don't know if I've gotten into this deep enough. I don't think there is any law that says you can't do this. We have a court decision. We also have case law, three or four other court decisions. We're not changing the law. We're not changing policy. The courts have done it. No.
But I think Representative Anderson. Well, go ahead. I'm not going to speak anymore. It is. Case law is law.
We're 3-1 now. We have 3 cases to 1 case.
Well, you have statutory law and you have case law. It's all law.
Okay.
Mr. Stacey.
Madam Chairperson, members of the committee, Bob Stacey, 1000 Friends of Oregon. As the chairperson and Representative Parkinson know from their experience as local government officials, one difficulty that city councils and boards of commissioners face in the area of land use is that local government officials are expected to act both as legislators in establishing policy through ordinances and the comprehensive plan texts in the area of land use, and as judges in decisions on specific land use applications to judge those applications against the particular requirements of the codes or laws that they've adopted. One set of procedures applies in one area, another in the second. In the legislative realm and enacting ordinances, the full give and take of a legislator with the legislator's constituents is obviously essential to gauging the public opinion and the sense of the community about a matter of policy. In the area of weighing an application against a specific set of standards, except where public policy is part of the standard or consideration, the considerations and procedural requirements of judicial type decisions are more appropriate. That's what the Supreme Court said in Fasano in 1973. As the Vice Chair and the Chair discussed, there have been subsequent decisions in the Court of Appeals and in the Supreme Court in Neuberger elaborating further on just what the ex parte contacts part of that set of procedural rights and protections means. Despite that development in the case law, I think one of the fallouts of the Fasano decision has been a general concern, as has been discussed earlier in this hearing, on the part of local elected officials that in order to avoid trouble, they'd better avoid any communication with their constituents, particularly an applicant or an opponent of a particular application. This bill, as we understand it, and our reason for supporting it, is that it provides a cure from that overreaction on the part of local officials to the Fasano decision. The point of the no ex parte contacts requirement, as it's come to be known in shorthand, was not that communication outside the hearing room is automatically poison, but that the purpose of disclosure, the purpose of avoiding those contacts without disclosure, I should say, is to assure that both sides to a specific case have a full opportunity to rebut any arguments that are made by one of the sides in private, to make sure that the decision maker that's heard an argument about the facts gets the other side, if there is another side on that specific point. Senate Bill 318 establishes a procedure, a disclosure, an opportunity to rebut procedure that assures that those fundamental rights of the parties, whether that's the applicant or an opponent, are guaranteed. And we support that procedure. We think it's consistent with the objective of the Fasano decision, and it's certainly consistent with subsequent Court of Appeals decisions that have said that ex parte contact per se does not establish bias. It's the failure to provide an opportunity to rebut the communication, the substance of the communication that creates the problem. I do have some concern about one of the amendments proposed in the A. and Gross, and I'd like to go on from here to describe that concern.
Yes.
Madam Chair, I do have a question.
Representative Hill.
I'm a little confused as to what contact means. Does that mean any person who's a direct party to the case or any of their associates or representatives? Or what if there's broad standing, a number of parties in the case? Does it mean every single one of the parties?
I think as a practical matter, Representative Hill, what it means is that a decision maker should be relatively prudent to make sure that wherever he or she is has heard from someone about the substance of this issue, to go ahead and place that information, whatever it is, on the record. So if a letter is received by the Planning Commission member from someone who's just generally upset about a proposed industrial development, doesn't like that kind of industry, he can submit that letter into the record. If he receives a phone call of the same variety, he can report that phone call is an event. And of course, if he receives a visit from the next door neighbor who wants to spend 20 minutes telling the council member why that industry would be bad next door, he needs to provide the information that he received from that opponent so that the applicant has an opportunity to rebut it.
Madam Chair.
Representative Parkinson.
Places on the record. Do all city councils have recorders and stenographers and everything? What does it mean, places on the record?
I'm going to punt a little bit, Representative Parkinson. I'm trying to remember the public records law and the requirements in the public records law for record keeping in public meetings. I know that a mechanical record in the form of tape recording is sufficient to comply with that law. I don't know whether it's a necessary requirement of that law. In other words, having minutes kept or having a mechanical record kept is, I believe, what the statute requires.
Whose amendments were they have to disclose prior to these amendments?
These amendments are
placed on the record.
Oh, placed on the record? I don't know if those.
I assume whoever did.
Cheryl
would know.
Placed on the record. Was that your amendment? I mean, was that originally in the bill? Because we don't have a copy of the original bill.
Places on.
That was, are you talking about line on 318A, line 18, places on the record?
Yes.
That amendment came from the Senate committee at the suggestion of Senator Starkovich.
Yeah.
And that language was taken from 318, or excuse me, the APA, the existing APA regulations.
And then further, Madam Chairman, the next sub B has a public announcement content made at each hearing where action will be considered. How would that be handled, and how far would it go? A public announcement, if this goes clear to the Supreme Court, would each time that this public announcement would have to be made?
There's been a change to that, as I understand it, in these proposed amendments.
No, I think what Representative Parkinson is trying to do, I don't have my original bill.
I got A. and Gross.
A. and Gross.
Yeah, but Representative Hill has the original bill.
In the Representative Parkinson
and I think he's trying
amendments.
To figure out where. Okay.
That's amended out.
That Representative Parkinson, Madam Chairperson, that would could be a potential requirement, and it was one specter that we flagged from the A. and Gross bill that we would address in the proposed amendments dated 6/22 to say that it would be the first hearing following the communication. Thus, it's on the record, be that a tape recording or minutes or a transcript provided to an appeals body, and thus providing other parties to the action an opportunity to rebut.
No, that's nice.
That would be in the proposed amendments.
Okay, there'd just be one time that'd be done.
What? In line 7 and 8 of the proposed amendment stated 6/22.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Mr. Stacey, Representative Van Lewis.
We had placed here this material. Were you using it? It really addresses the situation.
This came, yes, I read through that. That's from Mr. Gloge.
The bottom.
From Ellen.
I don't know who it came from, but the bottom of page one and the top of page two read.
Gordon Folt passed this out from the Association of Oregon Cities. Mr. Stacy, would you like to go on?
Thank you, Madam Chair. The one concern we have about the proposed amendments, which are dated today, is in lines 10 through 12, and again on 22 through 24 of page one of the proposed amendments.
Okay, line. What was it again?
10 through 12, mm-hmm. and 23 through 24 for county and city decisions, respectively, creating an exemption from the disclosure requirement or the definition of ex parte contact, I suppose. Any communication between a county or a city staff member and a member of the decision-making body. We oppose exempting city or county staff communications from the description of ex parte contacts. I have to point out that this is a new issue. The bill